Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Of course, this week on Tuesday, we observe the 17th anniversary of 9/11 as the images of the attacks at Ground Zero in New York of the Twin Towers, the Pentagon in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, which President Trump gave a wonderful speech as another portion of the monument was dedicated there in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, in observance of 9/11. And it's been 17 years since that fateful day when terrorists took advantage of our free society, hijacked planes, drove them into the Twin Towers and into the Pentagon, and then attempted another attack in Washington. But it was thwarted by the brave souls who were the first line of defense as they were able to take over the cockpit and drive that plane into the ground, of course, losing their lives in the process, but saving other lives. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. And if you want to learn more of our organization, you can log on to our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. Well, today we're going to continue our candidate forum series on air, and with us on the phone, we are privileged to have our current Attorney General, Mike DeWine, who is running for governor, and he will be on your fall ballot. He is facing off against Democratic candidate Richard Cordray. Well, Mike has served in a number of offices over his career. As many of you remember, he was county prosecutor in Greene County way back in the day. He also served in the Ohio Senate. He served in the U.S. Congress, both as a House representative and also in the U.S. Senate. He was also a lieutenant governor with then-Governor George Voinovich, who served for a couple of terms. And for the last 7.5 years, almost 8 years now, he has been our state attorney general, and he is running for governor in November. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Chris, good to be back. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you. And you've had a long and illustrious career, and it looks as if you want to top it off with the governor's office. And I think you bring a lot of experience to that. No one would doubt that over your career of various levels of government in which you've served, you're bringing that expertise and that experience to the governor's office in your bid for November. But I'm going to, with you, as I ask every candidate, tell us why you're running for Ohio governor.
You know, Chris, I run for governor because throughout my career, I've really been a problem solver. I've been always able to pull people together and get things done. I think we have a great future in the state of Ohio. This is a state that I think has been moving forward the last 7.5, 8 years. But it's my intention, and John Houston, my running mate's intention, to take Ohio to the next level. We've got some challenges. If you look at the challenges we face, it seems to me there's a couple that you start off with. And one is the drug problem that we have. You and I have talked about this drug problem in the past. The other is a skills gap, education gap, where we've got businesses, as I go around the state, who keep telling me I can't find people to work, I can't find people who can pass a drug test, or I can't find people who have the requisite skill set. So let me talk about these two real quickly. And then we can get into further details as we go on.
Sure.
The drug problem. We have a 12-point plan that I put out. You can find it on our webpage along with our other proposals and programs. And they're really a guideline to what I'm going to do when I'm governor. But it's a 12-point plan on the drug problem. It works on prevention. Works on the law enforcement side, but also on the treatment side. Just let me mention, I won't go through all 12. Let me mention a couple of the 12. One is prevention. The evidence clearly shows that if we start in kindergarten and do something that's age appropriate every single year, K through 12, 13 straight years, and we do this with every kid in the state, I will tell you it's going to have a monumental result. And it's not just so much about teaching kids about drugs, that's part of it, but it's about, teaching them good decision-making. and giving them, frankly, the tools that they need to stay away from drugs. You know, I don't know if we'll have an opiate problem in 5 years or 10 years, but we'll have some drug problem. That's been my experience. And so this plan is to really get these kids ready so that they, you know, have the tools to avoid that and not go down that path. The second, I think, challenge that we face is kind of a skills gap where we don't have people with requisite skills to match particular jobs. And I would just invite our listeners, if you've not been into your local career center recently, make an appointment, go in. They'll show you what they're teaching the high school kids who are in the career center. And it's not, you know, it's not your career center of 10, 15, even or 20 years ago. This is 21st century learning for 21st century jobs. And so we're going to put a lot of emphasis on that. We want for every child in the state what I want for my own children. Fran and I have 8 children, as you know, and we have 23 grandkids.
Yes.
What we want, you know, it's great. What we want for each kid is for them to be happy. And we know to be happy, one of the ways you're happy is to find something you really have a passion for. And so we want every child to have opportunity to live out whatever their dream is. But to do that, I think we have to expose these kids to all kinds of different opportunities. And for some kids, it's going to college. But for other kids, it may be on a pathway to get a trade, to get a career where they have skills. We've got a lot of jobs out there that are not being filled because people don't have the skill set. So we're going to focus, you know, on those two things. Those are going to be two of the really big things that we focus on. I just want to say something about my running mate, John Husted. You know, John has been Speaker of the Ohio House. He's been involved in economic development. He's really in a great position to help me when I am governor. But as you and I have talked many times, Chris, what's the most important thing? It's character,
yes,
values.
Yep.
And John shares my values. You know, he is someone who was adopted as a very, very young child. Spent a little time in a foster home, and was then, as he says, he hit the lottery and he got lucky, and he was adopted by 2 great parents. You know, he has very, very profound feelings about abortion and against abortion, and as you know, has a really pro-life voting record. But his, you know, not only a voting record, but this is something he cares passionately about. As you know, you and I have talked about many times, that my wife Fran and I do as well.
Well, that's right. And, you know, this is a decision on the fall ballot for the right to life issues. And you've been an advocate, a pro-life advocate all your career. No one questions the credentials of Mike DeWine in your pro-life position. But I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. In fact, on our voter guide, we had a question: prohibiting abortion when a heartbeat is detected. You support that position. Is that correct?
Well, I have said that if the legislature passes that bill, I will certainly sign it into law. Look, we don't know what the Supreme Court will do, but it's going to take a few years for a case like that to wind its way to the United States Supreme Court. And, you know, what we would hope is that, you know, this matter would be returned to the states, which is where, you know, many of us, even people who aren't pro-life, many of us people think that this is where it should have remained, and that Roe was really wrongly decided.
That's right. And, of course, also there's issues of defunding Planned Parenthood. You support that position as well, of defunding Planned Parenthood. Is that correct?
Chris, I'm defending the state of Ohio's action, the state legislature's action, the governor's action in regard to defunding Planned Parenthood. We had a lower court decision, unfortunately, that said that we did not have the right to do that. I think it's a basic right of the people to determine how the taxpayers' dollars are being spent. You know, my problem with Planned Parenthood on a personal basis, on a policy basis, is, of course, they are, you know, the biggest abortion provider in the country. So this is not a question about anything else, but the fact that they are, you know, a huge abortion provider. And I just think that is very unfortunate, very sad.
Well, that's right. And there's been reports about Planned Parenthood. Certainly people want monies going to help women in health issues, but Planned Parenthood's not the answer for that.
Well, Chris, that's absolutely right. And I think it is important for our listeners to understand that, you know, we want help for people. You know, we have a woman who has a pregnancy and maybe she doesn't have medical coverage or some reason she needs help. You know, we want to help her and we want to help her health and we want to help her through that. And there's organizations out there that are doing that. Planned Parenthood is you know, not the only game in town. And what the legislature decided to do was to fund other organizations that were not abortion providers, but that could provide, you know, good health care and checkups and those things. So no one listening to this should think that we don't want that for these citizens of Ohio. We
right.
want that.
Yep.
But there's just a real concern about the fact that Planned Parenthood is, you know, as I said, the biggest abortion provider in the country. And, you know, one of the things that we found when we did our investigation of Planned Parenthood, we found that they were disposing of fetuses, you know, in a landfill. At least some of the abortion clinics from Planned Parenthood were disposing of the fetuses in a landfill in northern Kentucky. I mean, it's just shocking. I think everyone was shocked when they
horrible.
Found that out.
Horrible.
It's horrible.
Well, again, we're talking with Mike DeWine. He is a candidate for Ohio governor, and he will be on the November 6th ballot. And, Mike, what's your website so people can learn more about your campaign as well?
Well, that, you know, one of the things that they can do, first of all, is to see any of my positions, just go MikeDeWine.com. MikeDeWine.com will get them into all the different position papers we have. It will also allow them, if they want to volunteer, if they want to sign, you know, and we just would welcome the help of any of our listeners. This is a close race for governor. We're ahead. We intend to stay ahead, but it is a close race. And, you know, voter turnout, people actually showing up is very important.
I want to go back to one of the things that we talked about when you talked about job career, and I thought that's an excellent point because we advocate for that within our high schools, going back to more of a career-based education for some. Not everyone is slated for college, nor should they go to college or inquire or incur a college debt, as it were, because that's a big problem for those who go to college and get a degree but really don't go to work within their degree specification and then find that they have this mountain of debt. But you talked about on the stump, there was something that caught my attention. Your BCI unit has really been ramped up during your time as Attorney General. And these are the criminal investigation labs, and you've done a great job with that, making BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, a very functioning office out of the AG's office. Then you talked about Bowling Green University, how in real time where there's people studying criminal science and then actually becoming interns and segueing right and working with the BCI unit through their internship at college and then transitioning right into the workforce. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think one of the more exciting things that we did is partnered with Bowling Green State University and built our crime lab. We actually have three, Chris. We have one in London, one in Bowling Green, and one in Richfield, near Cleveland, up in the Akron, Cleveland area. And we do the work for about 90% of the police departments in the state of Ohio. So when you watch NCIS or all the crime shows, you'll see, you know, someone doing that kind of forensic work. So we thought it would be a great idea to put it on the campus. It saves money, frankly. It's a great partnership with Bowling Green State University. They have been able to develop a master's program in forensic science, forensic research, something that we really need. We've got kids now coming from all over the country to come to Bowling Green State University, and we also have a real pathway to a job. People can come up there, and for 4 years they can study, they can get their undergraduate degree. But, you know, if they do the right things, they could move right into our crime lab and work for us. So it's something that is very very, very exciting, and it's worked very well. I will tell you, I just mentioned something else that we have done. We have, because we want young people to really understand all the different jobs that are out there, and that when they watch TV on the crime shows, that there are people there who are really doing real jobs, and those jobs really exist.
Yes.
And so we put together a curriculum for fourth graders. We call it BCI Science School. BCI Science School, and again, anyone who wants to go up on our official webpage, that would be our official webpage, ohioattorneygeneral.gov, and they can get information about that BCI Science School. What it really is a fourth grade curriculum of about 20 class periods, and it is just an exciting thing. We hired, to put this together, we hired a curriculum specialist so that it covers all the things that a fourth grader should be learning. But we have taken it out in the field, and it's available to any school, public, private, you know, charter, any kind of religious school, anybody. And we will provide the workbook. We will provide basically pretty much everything you need to do that. And what you find is that kids can solve their hypothetical crimes, their pretend crimes, but they get to solve them. They get to do science. They get to do experiments. And what you find is when the kids get done with that, they're very excited about science. They're very excited about forensic science. Now, I don't know if any of them will, you know, we won't know for many years if any of them actually go down that pathway for a career. But it's a good thing because I think it exposes them to that as a possibility.
Well, that's one area of transitioning from your college study into real-time workforce through the BCI and what you've done with the criminal investigation labs. But you'd like to see the Ohio universities work more with private business and in the private sector so that these young kids that are going to college, they can actually see real-time application as to their degree going right into the workforce. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, these relationships with schools and business is very important. I mean, you see it at the high school level when we're talking about our career centers. And the career centers in Ohio that are really working very well are career centers that work with these local businessmen and women. They develop a curriculum that matches the needs of those companies. Then these kids many times get internships. Sometimes they start down the road on an apprenticeship, but really the school, the career school, the vocational school, working hand in glove with the local businesses, that works exceedingly well. We also see that with our two-year colleges, that again, that very, very close relationship. And, you know, a lot of times, Chris, you know, we think it's vocational school or college. Sometimes it's both. We had a young girl, Fran and I gave a scholarship. We did some scholarships for kids, and we gave a scholarship to this young girl, and she was homeschooled, and she had learned how to weld in 4-H. She came to us, and so she was able then to go to the Hobart School of Welding. She finished that, which is more kind of a career tech training, and then she decided, well, I want to go to college, and so then she went to Ohio State. Graduated in something that is you know, similar to that, and she is now down. The last time I saw her, she told me she was living in Alabama making rockets for the U.S. government, so that will ultimately go up into space. So, you know, it's getting kids excited about things, showing them all the opportunities that are out there, letting them find their passion. There's just nothing better than when a young person discovers, I love to do this. And it usually coincides with something they're good at. It's kind of hard to love something you're not very good at. But a lot of times those two will come together, and you'll see that young person really, really take off. And as I said, it doesn't necessarily mean you go down the college track or you go down the vocational track. Many times we've seen kids who go down the vocational track, then they flip over to college. But as they go along, Chris, they're getting credentials so that they can – even if they stop, they'll have something. You know, if they stop school, they'll have something where they can actually make a good living.
Absolutely. Now I want to talk about issue one. We have a few minutes left in the program, and issue one has just been certified for the ballot, and there's a lot of concerns with issue one. There's no one that's been out in front of fighting the opiate heroin drug addiction problem like you have over the last number of years as Attorney General, working with the faith community and law enforcement and community leaders to get out in front of the opiate addiction. And our communities have really suffered with the loss of those who have died during overdoses and those still addicted to the drugs and those in rehab programs. Issue one presents a problem where it may have wanted to reform Ohio law. It actually is opening up the floodgates for traffickers, according to the opponents. Tell us a little bit about issue one and your position.
Well, thank you so much for asking about that, because this is going to be on the ballot in 50-plus days. All our listeners are going to be voting on this, and for some of them who get an absentee ballot, they're going to be voting on it sooner. It's the first issue you're going to see, state issue one. And I'm sure it's well-intended, but let me tell you what it would say. It would say that anyone who is caught in possession of any amount of drugs, that they could not go to jail or prison the first time. They could not go to jail or prison the second time they're caught. They could only go to jail the third time, and even then it would only be a misdemeanor. So let's take someone who's got enough fentanyl on them to kill 10,000 people.
Lord.
And just think about this for a moment. That means when the police come upon them, when they arrest them, they find they have these drugs. Let's say a guy's driving down the street, he gets pulled over for something. He's got enough fentanyl, you know, between his legs or right beside his legs to kill 10,000 people. Well, we can't put him in jail. So what do you think is going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is, the Mexican drug cartels are going to put a big gold star in Ohio, and they're going to say, that's the place to go, and we'll send our people up, and, you know, they'll be okay until they get arrested once, they get arrested twice, they can't be put in jail, and, you know, then after a while, someone gets arrested twice, well, they'll substitute somebody else in. But it is just the most ludicrous, ridiculous thing that I can imagine.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court wrote a letter about it. She is against it. We're seeing judges all over the state, Democrat, Republican, come out against this. We're seeing the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association come out against this. This is just a disaster. Now, let me tell you another thing that it will do. I know we're running out of time, but the other thing it would do is with about four or five exceptions, it would say that someone who is in prison for any crime, except these four or five exceptions, if they went to a program, participated, I think is the word, in a program in prison, that they could get their sentence reduced. And if they did this enough, they'd get their sentence reduced up to 25%. So a human trafficker who is in prison could get his prison sentence reduced by 25%. Vote no on issue one. It is horrible. Unfortunately, my opponent, Richard Cordray, is for this. I can't understand why.
Adamantly against it. Well, my guest has been Attorney General Mike DeWine. He is running for governor. He will be on your fall ballot on November 6th. And if you want to learn more information about the campaign, MikeDeWine.com. Mike, thanks for being my guest today.
Chris, great to be back. Thank you very much.
God bless you, sir. Thank you, and Godspeed. And if you missed any of our today's program, you can always log on to our website at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Chris Long with the Ohio Christian Alliance, encouraging you to register and vote. We're also encouraging churches to conduct Citizenship Sundays now through October 7th, which is the voter registration deadline for this year. You can conduct a successful Citizenship Sunday by going to our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance and download the helpful voter registration packet. Just click on the Register to Vote icon and 8 pages will load, and you can print those off, which includes a voter registration form, application for absentee ballot, any voter guide request form of how many voter guides you will need for your church. Again, just go to our website at ohioca.org or Google Ohio Christian Alliance or phone 330-887-1922.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And continuing with our candidate forum on air, we're going to focus in on the Attorney General's race. And with us on the phone is our current state auditor, Dave Yost, who is running for Attorney General, who will be on your fall ballot on November 6th. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. We had a chance to see each other on the weekend as you've been crisscrossing the state and meeting with groups all across Ohio and talking and making your bid for Attorney General. Tell us a little bit what that's been like, meeting with the folks across Ohio.
The people of this state are consistent encouragement to me. You know, we see so much on the news that just makes us shake our heads. But when we get out of what the cameras are willing to show us and actually talk with each other and get out around the state, I'm just encouraged by how optimistic and just how good the people of Ohio are.
Well, you know, we've been doing these candidate forums for a few weeks. We just finished up with current Attorney General Mike DeWine as he's running for governor. So I'm going to ask you the question, why are you running for Attorney General?
I'm running for Attorney General to protect Ohio, to protect the business environment, to protect the physical environment, to protect our kids and our neighborhoods, to protect the rule of law. I feel like I've been getting ready for this job my whole life, and I am really excited about the next couple of months until the election.
You know, our current Attorney General has done a lot of work with the opiate addiction, heroin addiction in the state. He's met with community leaders. He's met with law enforcement and faith leaders to get out ahead of the opiate addiction. Ohio ranks one of the worst in the country, unfortunately. A lot of drug trafficking coming into the state. We're going to talk about issue one in a minute, which he discussed that he's vehemently against it, believes it will just be throwing gasoline on the fire of the opiate addiction epidemic in Ohio. But how will you continue the work that he's done with both the BCI labs and also with the opiate addiction recovery and law enforcement? How will your office, do you envision running in parallel or in addition to what he's already done?
Well, we're looking to build on Mike DeWine's successes. He's worked hard at this and was working to combat this epidemic before a lot of people wanted to talk about it. So I really respect the work he's done. But, you know, as he's done the work and many, many other people have done the work over the last 10 years, we started to learn some things. And I think I'm in a position where I've concluded that not everything we think about this is really right. We need to take a deeper look at the evidence and start rethinking how we're approaching some of these things. For example, our criminal code doesn't make a lot of sense. If you are possessing less than 10 unit doses of heroin or oxycodone, that's felony to the fifth degree, punishable by up to 1 year in prison, although hardly anybody actually goes to prison for that. If you are trafficking, if you're a drug dealer in in fewer than 10 doses, then it's a felony of the sixth degree. It's the exact same offense. And it seems to me that we are really missing the point here when we are talking about treating a drug dealer the same way we treat an addict. The addict is a personal tragedy, and my heart goes out to the families that have a loved one that's fallen into this sickness. But it's a purely private kind of thing. When you're talking about a drug dealer, you're talking about a virus. They make more of themselves. They make more addicts. They multiply. And society ought to treat that as a much more serious offense. So I think the first step is to rationalize the criminal code to reflect the actual wrong done. The second thing we've got to do is we really have to start talking some sense about treatment. And I have nothing but admiration for people in the treatment community. This is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Yes.
But you would almost think, by listening to the news media, that if we just had more money to put into treatment, we could lick this thing. And that's simply not true. The fact of the matter is, within 6 months completing a 30-day inpatient addiction treatment program, about 3 out of 4 are going to relapse within 6 months. Treatment professionals tell me that it usually takes about 7 interventions on average before somebody achieves long-term sobriety. So we can truthfully say we're not going to arrest our way out of this, but we're not going to treat our way out of it either, which means we've got to get to the point where we have better prevention. And this is the third kind of leg of the stool that you hear a lot of people talking about, how we have to do it. When you actually look about what they want to do, it's mostly what we've been doing since the 1980s. You know, let's have education in the schools. Let's have meetings. Let's educate people. That's not going to work. And you know why? It's because it's too diffuse. The idea of diffusion in communication theory basically says that the more people are aware of information or given information, the less likely they are to act on it. And Chris, you might remember in the 1960s, the case of a woman in New York City named Kitty Genovese. She was brutally assaulted and murdered in a little common space. It was surrounded by high-rise apartment buildings. Back in the days before we had air conditioning, so everybody's window was open. Hundreds of people saw this woman murdered. Nobody called the police. Why is that? Because when everybody's responsible, nobody's responsible. I'd like to see us get to a point where we are looking to see who is most likely to have a problem with addiction, and you do this in the medical setting, the treatment setting, individualized between the doctor and the patient. We know 80% of all new addictions happen through the medical avenue in one form or another. And I think there's some science out there that's going to allow us to look at genetic and behavioral markers to enable us to really become much more targeted and therefore much more effective at avoiding these addictions before they happen. Then we can use our limited resources for corrections and for treatment and actually have an impact.
We're talking with Dave Yost. He's running for Attorney General. He will be facing off against his Democratic opponent on the November 6th ballot. David, you know, as you're running for Attorney General, you know, some of the questions that come to people's minds, for instance, what we'd like to ask you, many candidates say they're either pro-choice or pro-life. What is your position on the abortion issue?
Well, I'm pro-life, and Chris, you've met my wife, Darlene. what you might or might not know is that she was adopted in the years before Roe versus Wade, and her mom, she was an unwanted pregnancy, and her mother would have told her adoptive parents that she would have elected an abortion had it been legal, and gave Darlene up for adoption only because that was her only legal option. Well, not only has my precious wife been making a difference for a lot of years ever since that decision, and I applaud her mother's decision to do that, but I've got three kids now. They're all grown adults, and they're making a difference in the earth. My son's a worship leader at his church and a leader, my daughter is a probation officer and affecting lives for the better. And my son is a musician and a businessman, and everybody, they're all having impacts in the world around them. And then there's my granddaughters and my grandson. My oldest grandchild was elected mayor of her class, but starting politics early, I guess. But the point is, already at this point, we've got now seven lives that are making the world much better because of one woman's decision to choose life. And that's, I understand the difficulties and the emotion around this issue, but I just can't ignore the evidence of my eyes and come to any other conclusion.
Back in the day, there was an attorney general, I believe it was Lee Fisher, that actually went after crisis pregnancy centers because over names of which they would call themselves women's health clinics. And he was filing a suit against crisis pregnancy centers just over their name distinction, weaponizing, quite honestly, the attorney general's office to go against the pro-life community. We've not seen that in recent years. Obviously, Mike DeWine has not politicized his AG's office. He's basically gone out and done work in the community with the opiate addiction crisis. Or other functions of the Attorney General's office, for instance, the BCI units, which he has ramped up their effectiveness, of course, in helping local law enforcement in its investigation of crimes. But, in times past, there have been those who come into the AG's office and use it for political purposes. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Chris, you've put your finger on something that bothers me a lot. And it's not just the Attorney General's office. We've weaponized our politics, and things that are a matter that used to be a matter of disagreement and debate and civic discourse are now degenerating into character assassination lies and misrepresentations. It's deeply troubling, but it's especially troubling when I see it happen in attorneys general offices around the United States. And if there's one place that ought to be free of politics, it's our courts and the rule of law. I'll be a rule of law attorney general. As auditor, I've kind of taken the approach that I don't have friends. I don't have enemies. I just have a job to do and call balls and strikes without regards to who might be on the other side of the desk. That's the way I'll act as attorney general as well. But my opponent is the exact opposite. He has already promised in emails to his followers that he's going to sue the current administration over this, that, and the other thing, Obamacare, immigration, net neutrality, you name it. They're all political decisions, and he wants to use a lawsuit in the courts to try to make law. I'm just firmly against that, and I think most Americans are. That's not what we need in the Ohio Attorney General's office. You'll get that with the other guy. With me, you'll get balls and strikes and the rule of law.
We're talking to with Dave Yost. He's the current state auditor. He is running for attorney general, and he will be on your November 6th ballot. Right now, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages, and we'll continue with our candidate forum. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back, and we're continuing with our candidate forum on air with candidate for Attorney General David Yost, and he is our current state auditor. David, there has been, our current Attorney General did file some complaints with the Obama administration, and you're saying that your opponent has already pledged to file some complaints or lawsuits against the current administration. Illegal immigration has been a topic, and one in which sanctuary cities, and we're actually seeing some Ohio municipalities try to move to a status of sanctuary city, which flies in the face of our immigration laws in our country. We just observed 9/11, and of course, illegal immigration and those coming over the border who we don't know and coming into the various states, including here in Ohio. We know that MS-13, the horrible drug trafficking violent gang from Mexico, has some tenants here in Ohio. What is your position on sanctuary cities, illegal immigration, and illegal immigrants that pose a criminal threat to the Ohio residents?
Well, let's start by talking for a second about what sanctuary cities are. Some places call themselves sanctuary cities, and what they mean by that is they welcome people from other countries. And, you know, that's something that has deep roots in the Judeo-Christian tradition. The problem that I have with sanctuary cities is when they defy the federal government. I'm a constitutionalist. You've mentioned a couple of the suits that Mike DeWine had filed. Mike is a constitutionalist as well. And so he stuck up to hold the river of the federal government within its banks. And when they tried to overreach, he would go to court and say, hey, the Constitution says that belongs to the state, not to the federal government. Well, the converse is also true. There are certain things that the Constitution says are federal responsibilities, raising an army and minting money, et cetera. And those things don't belong to the states. So it's obvious that immigration is granted by the Constitution to the federal government. And in fact, the Obama administration, of all people, sued the state of Arizona because the governor back then wanted to enforce the border more than along the Arizona-Mexico border with more vigor than the federal government wanted to. And they went to court, went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, yeah, this belongs to the federal government, and Arizona, it doesn't matter. You're not allowed to interfere. Well, that precedent from the Obama era applies, in my view, and I think any fair legal analyst would say that there's no distinction between what Arizona was trying to do to make it harder to get into the country illegally, and what some of these cities are trying to do to make it easier to be here illegally. It belongs to the federal government. The Constitution makes that very clear, and I've got a significant problem with cities that do that.
Your relationship, if you are elected with as Attorney General, what will be your relationship with local municipality and local law enforcement? How do you envision that?
Well, I came from local government. I was a county prosecutor in Delaware County. I understand how local government works, and frankly, that's where most of the work gets done. It's not in Columbus. It's in the local communities. The job of the Attorney General is to support those local sheriffs, police officers, and those law enforcement functions so that they can carry out their jobs. And we do that through a variety of ways, but largely support functions with the labs, defending the constitutionality of the statutes, providing database support, providing investigative support where we're asked, and I'm going to be a solid and reliable partner for our local communities as they fight to keep our families and neighborhoods safe.
Issue one is going to be on the ballot. The Secretary of State has just announced that it has certified for the ballot in November. There's a lot of concerns with issue one. What is your position on issue one?
I'm against it. And there's a lot of reasons that we don't have time to go into on this program. But let me name one. There is a synthetic opioid out there that's 1,000 times more deadly than heroin called fentanyl. And under issue one, 20 grams of this stuff is going to be a misdemeanor punishable by, get ready for it, probation. Even drunk driving gets you 3 days mandatory. If you get popped for drunk driving, you had two beers and you're a little bit over the limit, you got to go in for 3 days. Now, you maybe can do that as a secure educational program. They're going to lock you down for 3 days. With 20 grams of fentanyl, which is enough to kill 10,000 people, you get probation. There's something seriously, seriously out of whack with this, and a lot of other things in it as well that are really problematic. It's going to be chaotic. It's going to open the door and make Ohio a haven. It's going to be a sanctuary state for druggies. It's the wrong thing for Ohio. And by the way, when my opponent, who likes to claim he's a career prosecutor, was asked about this yesterday, because I came out and made my position very clear, he said he was listening. He wanted to listen to people. He hadn't made up his mind yet on this. I would respectfully say that if you don't know enough to know that possession of 20 grams of this stuff, enough to kill 10,000 people in Ohio, isn't bad.
Yeah, you know, that's right, David. In fact, there was a discharge of fentanyl by a inmate at a prison in southern Ohio in which nursing staff, police, some of the guards and some of the prison staff were taken to a local hospital because it had found its way into the air ducts and into the airways. And so it's a very volatile and dangerous drug. And like you're saying, issue one would just be a slap on the wrist of what is currently traffickers bringing it into our communities. It was Mike DeWine who said that basically, the heroin, they were putting it in $5 kits and making it to where people just calling up a pizza and then they literally delivered it to your house. So these people that are trafficking these drugs would basically get a traffic ticket if they're caught. So it really would minimize the offenses. And it's really putting gasoline on the fire of a drug addiction problem in which Ohio is one of the worst in the nation, one of the worst states in the nation of the opiate heroin addiction. And then you add to that fentanyl. Some of the other drugs. The problem is here, there are those who believe that we ought to legalize all drugs. I mean, the Libertarian Party in their platform believes that drugs ought to be legalized. I believe that they're a lunatic party, not just a Libertarian Party. It's kind of lunacy, anybody wanting to vote that way. So I agree with you. Issue one is insidious. Some people might look at this and say, well, you just can't throw everybody in jail. Well, no, there's ways in which the court system is looking at every case and they're seeing people that they don't want to put a mark upon them. We want to get out ahead of this with treatment, with recovery, helping individuals who are caught into drug addiction, but certainly the traffickers and, of course, the insidious drug cartels from Mexico that are into our neighborhoods now. This is going to do nothing but to encourage them, not discourage them or even defeat them. Your thoughts?
I agree with you. It's important to bear down just a second on this, because the people that are pro-issue one are going to say, oh, it says it doesn't affect trafficking offenses. It just affects possession. But here's the trouble. If we don't see the person actually weighing out the drugs or selling it, we may not be able to make a trafficking bust. That doesn't mean that they're not actually trafficking because they've got the drugs. If you've got, say, 49 balloons of heroin, there's not a junkie in the world that has 49 balloons. They're either a mule or a dealer, because if a junkie's got 49 balloons of heroin, you know what you got to name for them? They're dead, because they keep taking it until they overdose.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of these possession cases are actually de facto traffickers, and we need to not let them obscure the with a little bit of lawyer wording there.
Well, we agree with you, and no on issue one. And we're talking to State Auditor Dave Yost, who is a candidate for State Attorney General. He will be on your November ballot. David, thanks so much for being our guest today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
God bless you, my friend. And again, if you want to learn more about his campaign, go to Dave Yost. Just Google that and you'll find the campaign. And thank you for listening. Again, disclaimer that we do not endorse political parties or candidates, but bring this information educational to you, the listener. Thanks for listening. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.